Hello, everyone, and welcome to another beautiful Thursday morning. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I have a great show planned for you today. My guest is going to be Chef Rene Rodriguez Carrizaz from Peru. He is the owner of Tawar Restaurant, and he is the chef that I took a vegetarian cooking class with when I was down in Machu Picchu with my family. So it was just, he was a wonderful man, the cooking class was just great, and so I'm really thrilled that he's going to be joining us today. But first, I want to go through some things that are going on in the news, share my recipe with you, and of course, talk to you about Slow Food Nations, which I'm just returning from. And Slow Food Nations was just amazing, absolutely amazing. You know, when I first got there, I arrived there last Thursday, and I instantly hooked up with a group of Slow Food Colorado people, along with some other slow food people from around the country, who are interested in starting school gardens. And we toured school gardens throughout the Denver downtown area. And it was, you know, there was quite the gamut. You know, there was, you know, really small ones. There were ones that were attached to the community garden. And then there were raised bed ones that were being put out by a kitchen an organization called Kitchen Community that goes into neighborhoods in need of access to good food and starts school gardens in their school grounds. And I definitely was more of the fan of the gardens that were, you know, raised beds right into the ground as opposed to the other beds. But it was really interesting to hear how the same struggles we have here in trying to get parent engagement is happening there as well. The gardens that were most successful are the ones where you could really engage the teachers and not rely on the parents. The parents were good for maybe one day of volunteering to help get the bed started of a community action day. But then beyond that, you know, parents are willing to donate money and, you know, send things in, but they really are not very good at showing up and doing any of the work. I guess everyone is just so overscheduled. So it's best if you do set up a school garden to really have people on the inside that are willing to work it and help make that happen. But it was also just really nice with connecting with other slow food people and having that kind of time to do that. The next day, Friday, was a day dedicated to delegates of slow food. I was one of them, and there were about 300 or so people in the room, and the most amazing part, I think, was listening to Ricardo Salvador talk. He is the chief scientist and head of the Union for Concerned Scientists, and he was just amazing. He just really talked about how our food system, going back in time from the very beginning, has always been built on the backs of slaves and exploiting people. And we need to really look at how we can create a food system that is not dependent on that. And part of it is about educating people, consumers who are purchasing the food, to know that good food that is grown with people's hands is going to cost more, but the quality of it is so much better, so that people are willing to pay it. You know, the industrial food system is exploiting workers, and it is just not the way to go. And we need to really start looking at the food system and connecting all the dots. I mean, our healthcare system is connected with our food system. Our economy is certainly connected with our food system. Labor laws, food banks, the environment, of course. you know, everything is connected, and that's one of the reasons I love food so much. But we really need to start looking at those connections and looking at those dots and thinking about ways that we can make the system better and make it fair for everybody so that everybody has access to good, healthy, clean food. And that's what Slow Food Nations was about. And so, again, it was just wonderful to have that opportunity to meet people from around the world that are part of this big, like, let's call it a club or a movement more than a club. But there is a certain aspect of being part of this club. When you join Slow Food USA or Slow Food International, you are joining an organization that is committed to good, clean, and fair food for everybody. And that goes for the impoverished, it goes for indigenous tribes, it goes for all communities, and it's really working to try to bring everybody together. And I remember when I travel, when I went down to Puerto Rico, the first thing I did was connect with Slow Food Puerto Rico, and in San Juan I was able to go to a workshop where some farmers were there talking about what they were doing, and then this past weekend, they were up here in Denver, and I got to re-meet them and connect with them. When I was in Italy, I connected with Slow Food Rome, and I took a cooking class with them. And again, you just, you know, if you seek out slow food in any city you go to around the world, you're going to be connecting with other people that care about good, healthy, clean food and the joys of food, the pleasure of the food. And that's an integral part of it for me. For those of you that know me, know that so much of my passion is bringing people together around the table to share really good food. The one issue that I do have that I talk about often is the amount of meat that is present at these events. And Slow Food talks about, and during our delegate our full delegate day, a lot of talk is happening about people needing to eat less meat and the greenhouse gas emissions that are associated with the production of meat and the need for people to eat slow meat or better quality meat. All that comes up, and I get it. But we also need to then model that if people are going to give up meat, it doesn't mean that all they're going to get is a steamed broccoli. We need to show people how delicious healthy vegetarian food can be. And so at these tasting events, which are all over the place in these weekends, there needs to be more outrageously delicious, beautifully presented vegetarian food so people are like, wow, I could eat this for an entree. I don't need to have meat every meal. But if vegetables are constantly being presented as side dishes, that's where they're going to remain in people's heads and in their minds as side dishes. And we need to bring them out into the front. They need to become main courses. Sunday night, we hosted at our Airbnb a vegetarian dinner for some of the friends that we met over the weekend. And it was all vegan. And we had, you know, delicious, we made a vegan moussaka. We made some wild rice that we bought from the Turtle Tree Nation. We roasted lots of different vegetables. We had multicolored beets and sweet potatoes, all that we things that we found at the farmer's market. The peaches were unbelievable. We made a peach pie that was just delicious. So we just had a wonderful time creating a vegetarian, plant-based meal for those that came to our dinner, and it was wonderful. And so as someone who is not a vegan but eats that way most of the time, I am really trying to push my chapter and the people in my circle towards understanding that as a member of the planet Earth, as a citizen of the planet Earth and not just Americans, we need to realize that we can't monopolize more than our share of the resources on this planet, which means that we are not entitled to have meat three times a day. It just won't work because it's not enough for everybody. So we need to share. We need to have compassion. We need to only take our share. And everybody has to listen to their body, and I understand, do what feels healthy for them, and I'm not preaching one lifestyle over another, but I am really asking everybody to think about the food that they choose to eat and think about not taking more than your share, knowing that you're just a member of this planet Earth and that there has to be enough food for everyone. And so with that said, I would like to share with you my recipe this week. Now, this recipe was inspired by the cooking class I took in Peru with Chef Rene, who will be coming on in a little bit. This recipe is a vegetable curry quinoto. And throughout Peru, we were in restaurants that instead of risotto, they were serving quinoto. And it's basically a risotto type of dish, except made with quinoa. So it's even a bit healthier than the white rice that makes up risotto. Quinoa is a seed and is high in protein and is really very, very healthy for you. So I took the recipe that I did with him and I just added a little bit more vegetables to it. So it was, you know, had more greens in there. So I started with a cup of red and white quinoa. I mixed them together, half a cup of each, and I cooked that up according to the directions and then just let that sit on the side. And if you want, you can always, instead of cooking it just in water, you can cook it in vegetable broth or put some herbs into the water to help season the quinoa. Meanwhile, I chopped one onion, 6 cloves of garlic I minced, 1-inch piece of ginger I grated, 2 carrots diced, 1 organic yellow pepper diced, 2 cups small broccoli florets, 2 cups of bok choy chopped, 2 cans of organic coconut milk, 2 teaspoons curry powder, 2 teaspoons red curry paste, salt and pepper to taste, 1 tablespoon of organic coconut oil, and some cilantro for garnish. If anybody in your circle is not a fan of cilantro, you can use regular parsley instead. So whenever cooking quinoa, you do want to rinse it first and then cook it according to the directions, as I said before. And then in a wok over medium heat, you can add the coconut oil to the wok and just heat that up. And when it's hot, add the chopped onions and cook those until they're translucent. Then add the carrots, the garlic, and the ginger and cook those for a few more minutes. Add the peppers and the broccoli and continue cooking until soft. Then add the bok choy and cook that for about another 3 minutes. In a small bowl, I mix the curry paste with the coconut milk and kind of help dissolve the curry paste first, and then add that to the wok. Also add the curry powder and the salt and pepper and let that cook all together to take on the flavors. Then add the cooked quinoa and continue cooking for about 10 minutes. If you want it on a low heat, you can cover it, but just continue stirring it so it doesn't stick on the bottom. And then taste it. You can add a little bit more curry paste if you like, or some more curry powder if you want the flavor a little stronger. If you want a little extra heat, you can add some hot peppers or some red pepper powder. And then serve it up, garnish it with some cilantro, and it is just delicious. I made it again before I left for Colorado, and I know my husband was eating it all weekend long, so it was really wonderful. So check out the recipe. And then I just want to go over a few events going on in the city that you might be interested in before I bring on my guest. This weekend is the Food Truck Rodeo fundraiser at Crossroads Farm. That's in Malvern. That should be a fun event. Tickets are $20 for a family, so that's up to 6 members, or just $5 for an individual. So that should be fun. City Growers is having their summer Saturday workshops this weekend, and they have them on many Saturdays throughout the summer. So check out City Growers online and find out the schedule. This one on Saturday starts at 5:30 and it's $50. Ogo Farms, which is a great farm in Brooklyn, they are having a culinary tour also on Saturday from 10 to 11:30. You can check that out. There is another family farm tour on July 29th, also at Ogo Farms. And What other things do I want to share with you? The food truck derby, the big one that happens every year out in Bridgehampton, is happening on August 11th, so you might want to save that date. It's hosted by Edible East End. Slow Food East End is very involved in that as well. So it's at the Hayground School in Bridgehampton. That's a really fun thing to do, so check that out. And there is a compost welcome tour on August 12th, and that's an opportunity to find out about composting and what goes into composting at the Queens Botanical Gardens. And compost is really important. Doing it right is really important. I make compost, but I'm feeling like my compost is not getting hot enough, because when I use my compost soil, I then have lots of seeds and volunteer plants growing up in my garden, like my tomato plants and some extra melons or cucumbers. So it's important that the temperature of your compost really get hot enough. So if you want to learn how to do compost right, this might be the place to go. And save the date on September 4th, the Shinnecock Tribe is going to be having their Labor Day powwow, and that's always a fun event. So check that out. Also on my website, you will find some petitions that I'm asking everybody to sign. One is to prevent the cuts of SNAP recipients. The budget that our president has come out with, everyone knows, is really not in favor of any of the programs that help those in need. And so we, you know, please sign the petitions to help Democrats stand strong against the Republicans and repeal this new budget that they're coming up with, and the health care bill and the energy bill. There's so many things there, and you'll find them all on my website, ways that you can get involved. Vice President Al Gore, or prior Vice President Al Gore, came out with a sequel to The Inconvenient Truth, and I've heard some really great things about it. It's an inconvenient sequel, Truth to Power, and it really takes a look at where our climate action fight is right now and where we've come in the last 10 years since his last film. And I was just reading an unbelievably depressing article in the Time magazine also about climate change and where we're at. And this is an issue that we all really need to look at, and that is also why I bring up the issue about how much meat we eat and realizing that it's all connected, because the production of meat creates so many greenhouse emissions, and we need to, stop it in its tracks. We can't continue on the path we're going, because our children and grandchildren will really suffer if we don't do something about it. So please check out the petitions I have on my website, and, you know, read my newsletter. If you don't get my newsletter, please sign up for it at iegreen.com and find out what's going on and ways that you can get involved. So now I want to tell you a little bit more about my guest. Chef Rene Rodriguez is the owner and manager and chef of Tawa Restaurant, which is located in the heart of the Sacred Valley in Peru. It's a small, family-operated, intimate restaurant that specializes in local Peruvian cuisine, using organic ingredients whenever possible. They have lots of vegetarian and gluten-free options. Chef Rene's cooked in some of the finest restaurants in Lima before deciding to open his own restaurant in UK, which is right in the heart of the Sacred Valley. Chef Rene's also a sommelier. He knows a lot about wines, and he can really guide you in pairing food with some of the finest wines. And the wines he carries in his restaurant are from Chile, Argentina, Peru, and Spain. And it was just a pleasure to meet Chef Rene and to take his cooking class, and it's my pleasure to invite him on. Chef, are you with me? Chef?
Yep.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Hi.
Chef, I can't hear you well. Can you talk a little bit louder into the phone?
Pardon?
Hi, that's better.
Yeah. Hi.
I wanted to start by asking you, what is the philosophy upon which your kitchen is founded? What is the concept of your restaurant?
Actually, we are working in the Sacred Valley Group in Peru. We develop a cuisine of traditional and organic cuisine using the local...
We don't have a very good connection. Is it possible? I can't hear you very well. Is it possible to talk into the phone a little bit more and a little slower?
Sorry.
I think that's better. So tell me about your restaurant and the philosophy.
The restaurant, as I tell you, we are working many years with ingredients, no? The cuisine, we develop different dishes with ingredients like quinoa, like potato, like chilies, no? The concept of the restaurant is a fusion, traditional and contemporary cuisine.
Everybody, we're going to try to get a better connection with Chef Rene because it's very hard to understand him. So in the meantime, I'm going to talk to you a little bit more about some of the events that went on at Slow Food Nation because there were so many events going on throughout the weekend. And as I said before, they were great. On Saturday morning, I did a great tour of urban farms, and one of the best parts about it actually was also having the opportunity to be on a bus with members of Slow Food from around the country, and we visited quite a variety of farms. One was a couple really who just dug up their whole backyard. They only had, I think we figured out it was maybe a tenth of an acre that they were farming, and it was their first season, so they were really learning as they went. But they had quite an operation going. They were growing mostly greens because they were trying to cash in on crops that grow fast. And so greens, you know, you can get going every 3 weeks, and that works really well. Oh. My guest is back on, so let's try this again. Hello, Chef, are you with me?
Hi.
Hi, Chef.
Hello.
Is that better?
I think so.
Yes, that's better. Good. Okay, so now tell me again.
Okay.
My first question was, can you tell my audience, the people listening, the philosophy of your restaurant?
About our cuisine?
Yeah, the cuisine and your commitment to sourcing food that's local and organic.
Yes. Yeah, actually, in this year, we are working with the local ingredients, with the local farmers in the Sacred Valley. So actually, we use a lot of quinoa, a lot of potatoes. No, by the way, we have a small garden in the restaurant. We are producing our own vegetable, like chilies, different types of herbs, like cilantro, rosemary, dill. No, and lettuce, different type of lettuce, chilies, no, different things that we can use in the kitchen, and that's important for us because it's very fresh and organic.
Uh-huh. And what are the local crops that are grown in the Sacred Valley near where you live?
The most important product that we produce in the Sacred Valley is corn, white corn. It's a big corn, and we use the corn all the year, all the time, you know, fresh and dry. You know, it's one of the most important ingredients that we use. And then, as you know, we have different of types of vegetables, carrot, broccoli. And in these last 10 or 15 years, we are producing more different vegetables in the Sacred Valley, organic vegetables.
But in addition to corn, what are the other traditional crops that you grow in the Sacred Valley?
Potatoes. Potatoes grow a lot, different native potatoes. Actually, we are working with a farmer, a local farmer, who produce different types of native potatoes, different colors, different shapes. And that's very interesting because, for example, we are using a purple potatoes to make gnocchi, for example. No? And it's very fresh and it's very, very different. It's a For many people who try this, it's a nice surprise, no? to find a natural purple potato in making gnocchis.
Right. And when we were there and I took your cooking class, you had a really yellow potato also. What was that called?
That potato is called peruanita. It's a yellow potato. And as you know, when we make this appetizer called causa, it's made with yellow potato, yellow chili, no, salt, vegetable oil, and we put some vegetable in the middle because we make a layered. In the middle, we put the vegetables and avocado on top and black olive. Mayonnaise, no?
That was one of the dishes that we had in our cooking class. It was delicious.
Yes. And also we use the black olive, no, to make a dressing to put on top.
Uh-huh. Now, do the potatoes taste different? Do purple potatoes taste different than yellow potatoes?
Yes. No, every potato has a specific flavor, no? And some potatoes, we have, you know, thousands of potatoes here in Peru, but some potatoes we use for make fries, other potatoes are specific to make causa, other potatoes are to make potatoes cake, no?
So different potatoes for different dishes. Are you still there, Chef? Hello? Oh, I think I lost him again. I'm sure the station is trying again. Until he comes back, I'm going to go right back into talking about Slow Food Nations because I was talking to you about going to visit the gardens. And the first garden we visited was that couple where the backyard was dug up and they had less than a tenth of an acre that they were farming. And so I don't know if we're going to be able to get the connection back. They're saying the connection's not good, but I'm going to just keep talking to you about the events of Slow Food Nation because it was a weekend full of, I could talk for hours on Slow Food Nation alone. So we started this tour of the farms was with Josh Volk. He's an author. He has a new book out called Compact Farming, and the thing about his book. Oh, are they back on? The thing about his book was talking about compact farms and urban farms. And so the first one, like I said, was this couple who were just getting started. They grew mostly greens, which they could harvest quickly and sell in the farmers' markets. And then we went to another farm that was a little further out, a husband and wife couple again, who were able to take over a farm that had been in her family for generations. And so the way water rights worked in Colorado, that was pretty interesting to learn about, too, that actually you don't own the water or your rainwater that falls in your property. That is, I guess, government water, and it goes into the goes into the aquifers and belongs to whoever has the water rights. And so this couple had water rights because they owned the land for generations. And so even though there were many people in between them and upstream where the water came from, they had water rights, and so they could get as much water as they needed for their farm, which was a big issue, one that I don't usually think of here on Long Island. Of course, we have water issues, but, you know, I have town water, and I don't have a well, and I don't really have to worry about that because we have plenty of water. Let's see. And then the last farm that we went to was called Acres Farm at Warren Tech. And that's actually a farm that was started by a chef. Is he back on? My chef? Chef, are you there? I guess not. So Warren Tech University, or Warren Tech Farm, is also outside of downtown Denver. And I'm hearing noise. Do I have my chef? Are you on? Hi, are you there? Chef, can you hear me?
Okay. Hi.
Hi. I apologize for the poor connection, but let's keep trying to continue talking about your restaurant. Can you share with my listeners the type of food you have at your restaurant? What is the local cuisine?
Local cuisine, well, we use, you know, different products from Bali, you know, like quinoa, the potatoes, chilies, different vegetables, you know, mostly everything are organic.
But does your menu change in the season? Are sometimes, you know, things in season at different times of the year?
I can understand.
In summer, do you serve different food than in the winter?
All the year. You can find all the year different vegetables and different products. In the Bali, you know, grow everything all the time.
Uh-huh. So it doesn't change, your menu does not change with the season?
Well, if somebody needs something different than we offering, we can do it. Not just we need to know what the people want. You know, if we have any specific request or diet.
Uh-huh. And do you have a relationship with the farmers where you buy the food, or do you just go to the local market?
No, actually, local market and local farms too. People who work just with a specific restaurant, no, like me. For example, the potato farmers producing the potatoes. He's worked just with a specific restaurant. No, it's not all the time in the market. You can find potatoes in the market too, but not this type of potatoes.
Uh-huh. So you'll go directly to the farmers to get the specific potatoes that you want.
Yes. No. Normally, or probably, they are a little bit more expensive, but it's good. No, it's the quality and the particulars of this type of potatoes. No.
Mm-hmm. Now, when I was there, I took a cooking class with you. Do you offer cooking classes often?
Yes. Normally, we offer this activity in the restaurant, you know, in the garden of the restaurant, and we show to people how we prepare different dishes from Peru, no? like causa or ceviche, you know, or lomo saltado. And if somebody don't like eat meat, we can change and we can do with just vegetables too.
Mm-hmm. I had shared with my audience a few weeks back the vegetable ceviche recipe that we did together using mushrooms, but I had to change it a little because we don't have the lupine seeds here. So I used pumpkin seeds instead, and it worked really well.
Yeah, instead of lupines, you can use, for example, corn, no? And you can prepare corn and mushroom ceviche.
Uh-huh. I put corn in it also. Uh-huh.
Yeah,
I put corn in also.
It's very interesting because, you know, you have fresh corn, no, with fresh mushroom, with the all the rest of the ingredients like lime, like chili, like salt, pepper, no, and the tiger meal. Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yes, it's like a juice of the ceviche, but made with chili, celery, garlic, onions, you know, and lime juice, everything blended, and then you can put that also in the ceviche, no? And cilantro is very important in ceviche, always.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. Now, what is Pachamanca? You said you got this idea of doing a Pachamanca. Can you share with us what that is?
Yeah, sure. Pachamanca is a traditional and ancestral style to cook in the Andes. This is this activity we are offering in the restaurant. Normally, here we use different types of meat. You know, here in the Andes there is two kinds of herbs. One is called huacatay, and the other one is called chincho. These two herbs are very important to make a dressing to marinate this the meat. You can use chicken or pork or beef, but if not. Like it, meat, you can use other types of ingredients, no? Like fava beans, like plantains, like potatoes. No? The style to cook this is you have to put stones over fire, no, for 2 or 3 hours. When the stones are very hot, you put underground the hot stone with the rest of the ingredients, you know, the meat, you know, or potatoes or fava beans or different things. And then you put alfalfa on top, you know, alfalfa, and then you put the soil on top, finally. After 45 minutes, more or less.
Are you saying foil on top of the alfalfa and the stones?
Alfalfa, and then you put paper bags, no? And the soil. The soil on top.
Uh-huh. And then do you put more hot stones on top or just on the bottom?
You put the soil, and after 40 or 45 minutes, you will open it, and everything is cooked, ready to eat.
Uh-huh. And is everything cooked separately?
Yes.
I mean, are the meats and everything wrapped up, or is it all open on top of the stones?
Yeah, everything will be cooked, you know, and then you're ready to eat, you know. That is the traditional Pachamanca, you know.
Uh-huh. And do you do it in the backyard at your restaurant?
Yes, we are offering this for small groups or families or big groups also, no? And also, we accompany this food with salad, with corn, with chili sauce, with chimichurri. No, it's a very nice experience to try a different style to cook.
Uh huh. And you say if you want to do this vegetarian, you can do it vegetarian too.
Yes, we can do it also on vegetarian Pachamanca. No? It's not a matter. It's no problem.
Uh-huh. And what do you put in the vegetarian one?
Potatoes, plantains, fava beans. You can put corn. You know? Also, you can put tamales made with corn also, no?
Uh-huh.
And it's the same process, but all vegetables, all vegetarian.
Uh-huh. And if you use fava beans, do you have to cook them first, or they can cook just in the fire?
No, also on the ground.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Sounds delicious. Uh-huh.
Yes. It's very nice. It's very nice the style to cook.
Uh-huh. I know in your bio you say you're also a sommelier. Can you tell us about what kind of training you did to learn about wines?
I don't understand.
Can you share with us your interest in wine? You have a lot of wine at your restaurant,
wine.
Right? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We have a nice wine list in the restaurant. When we make the wine, we choose different Peruvians, Argentinians, Chileans, and a couple of Spanish wines. No? Also, the idea is to look for a good combination, good marriage between food and wine. No? Many people like to check the menu and also to check the wine list, because when I choose what is the best wine for me.
Uh huh. When we were there, you made a special drink for us called Pisco Sour. Can you share with my listeners what is Pisco and what is a Pisco Sour?
Pisco, yeah, sure. Pisco is a liquor from the grapes. You know? We have Pisco, it's a process by distillation. And we use in Peru more around 5 or 6 kilograms of grapes to make one bottle of Pisco. And actually, there are 8 different grapes to make Pisco. Now, it's very interesting. You can find aromatic and no aromatic Pisco. And the Pisco Sour is a very traditional cocktail in Peru. No? Actually made with pisco, lime juice, egg white, and ice cubes. No? We use a shaker to prepare pisco sour. And the recipe to make this cocktail is 1 ounce of lime juice, fresh lime juice, 1 ounce of sugar syrup, and 3 of pisco.
Uh-huh.
You put it in a shaker with ice cubes, 5 or 6 cubes. You shake it for 45 seconds or 1 minute. And then you can put also, egg white.
Egg white is
important because when you shake the cocktail with egg white, you will find the foam.
Right, it makes it really foamy.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
So in that recipe, we use 1 egg white. No? And after you shake it 1 minute, you serve it in the glass. In a cold glass, and put a drop of bitter, and that's it. No, Now also we prepare pisco sour of passion fruit, pisco sour of coca leaf, pisco sour of peppercorn, different macerated, different flavors of pisco.
Right. Well, the pisco sours were being served all over throughout Peru, and they're definitely the specialty cocktail of Peru, I think. And there were so many varieties, like you said, with the passion fruit and all different fruits.
Yeah, we have different varieties of pisco sours, no? But the classic is like I told you, but you can prepare with different flavors.
Uh-huh. Now, you just opened your restaurant this year, right? When did you open?
Yeah, we opened last year. Next tomorrow, we will have 1 year to open it.
Ah, congratulations. Yes. That's exciting.
Yeah, this is our first anniversary of Tawa. We work very hard with my wife to open this place, but it was made with a lot of work, but a lot of love to have our own restaurant. No, it's for us. It's a baby to this nice place.
Right. Well, we could feel the love when we were there, and that's why I invited you on, because we ate, at many places in Peru while we were there. But the quality and the love in your restaurant really stood out, and that's why I wanted to share your restaurant and your love of cooking with my listeners, because it was really special.
We are in Yucay. Yucay is a small village in the Central Valley, but the environment in this place is very nice. You know? The mountains, when you stay in the garden of the restaurant, you can see the mountains, the sky is blue all the time, and a lot of birds everywhere, flowers. It's very, very nice, and we work to have a cozy place for all people who come to Tawa.
Yes, well, I think it comes through. And the garden is just beautiful. I think, over years, as you make the garden bigger and bigger, you'll be able to supply more of the food for your restaurant with your own garden. And that will be really nice.
Yes, and one detail that we think to put in the garden is the oven, the roaster above the oven. Last night, for example, we had a group. We made a pizza night, and we cooked all the pizzas in the oven in the Adobe oven, and that is a different flavor, you know, because everything is cooked with wood.
Yeah? Right.
And it's nice, huh? And people enjoy.
Well, I think when I was there, I took pictures of the big Adobe pizza oven that you had in the back there, and it is beautiful. And I can imagine doing, you know, just making pizzas back there would be a lot of fun as well. They cook. How long does a pizza take in that oven? Like 3 minutes?
Yeah.
Uh huh. Yeah, it was really beautiful.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And this, the restaurant you run with your wife, correct?
Yes.
Uh-huh. And do you have any other family that works in the restaurant?
Yeah, well, actually, I work with my wife, you know. She also worked many years in different hotels as a bartender. She was bartender for many years, and now we work together in Tawa. We are in charge in the kitchen, the service, and also her is in charge now in the service in the restaurant too. And we have a nice team who worked years with us, you know, the chef in the kitchen and the staff in the restaurant, you know, are local people who are there from Urubamba, from Japan, and they learn how we like to do in the restaurant, and that's important for us, the team.
Yeah, well, the service was really exceptional. And you could feel that everybody was working as a family together to make everyone's experience really special. Well, everyone listening. What's that?
Pardon?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear what you said. But anyway, Chef, I will share your information with everybody who listens. I'll put your restaurant online. And hopefully when people go down to Peru and they're traveling around, they will make a special trip to Yucay and visit Tawa Restaurant.
Yes. Well, we are in the Sacred Valley, in the beautiful Sacred Valley in Yucay, which is a nice village. And I want to invite all people to visit when they stay in Cusco. We are a family restaurant, not working to people enjoy our experience in Tawa. No, we work thinking in people stay, have a experience of food, of service, and in a relaxed place.
Well, they will.
We are we have our website where you can find you can see our menu and all the activities that we are offering to all the people, and cooking class, pachamanca or pizza night also are available in the restaurant.
That's great. Well, I will share that with everybody, and thank you so much for joining me today. I apologize that the connection was not wonderful, but we'll work on that, and I hope to see you again in Peru. And if you're ever in New York, come visit us.
I hope that. Thank you very much for this time. It was a pleasure to share with you and your and the community about our Tawa, about your experience with us. And thank you very much again.
You're welcome. And everybody out there listening, thank you so much for joining us. Go on the website to Slow Food USA or Slow Food Nations to find out more about this past weekend, which, like I said, was just really exceptional. And I will be with all of you again next week. Have a wonderful rest of the week, and bye for now.